Back to left corner to Aguilla. Aguilla to left circle. Passing to Yell. A shot. Save made by Aguilla. Rebound. Another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score! And the sea of red erupts!
Flames Talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg and Wes Gilbertson.
It is Monday, November 25th, and we are underway this hour on Flames Talk. Welcome, welcome with Wes Gilbertson of Post Media. My name is Pat Steinberg, and welcome to the Sports Drive. It's underway, brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Treat yourself with up to $500 in savings of fire-resistant gun safes. Explore the full line of safes at CalgaryLockAndSafe.com. What's up, Wes? How we doing?
We're good, buddy. How about you?
Good. I'm good. Hope you all had a wonderful weekend. So here's the situation. Flames have opened up the second quarter of the season now. They start off a new week, and they start off a four-game road trip. They do that all sitting second in the Pacific Division and fourth in the Western Conference. That's where things sit as we're talking right now. Flames Talk on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get your podcasts. Of course, live right here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Second in the Pacific, fourth in the West, and not because they've played a bunch more games, not like they've played 26 and the rest of the conference has played 21. Text line needed to get in on this topic as well. 960-960 for the next little bit here, because I have a question I think many have been asking and many remain asking right now in this market and elsewhere. Like, how are the Flames doing this? What are we seeing? How have they been so far ahead of expectations, at least so far ahead of many of the outside expectations? And honestly, you know, I did a little bit of an informal poll with some people in the organization. Yeah, there's like, I think there's some surprise inside the organization.
I mean, they'd be lying if they told
well,
it was.
That's exactly what you heard. Like, I would be lying if I said, right? And then I think, as much as I think both you and I didn't expect them to be bottom feeders, you and I didn't expect them to be truly in the lottery hunt, I don't think we expected second in the Pacific and ahead of Vancouver, Edmonton, and Los Angeles, again, on merit, on points and points percentage this far into the season. So I think even for folks like you and I were, and I think we had decently realistic expectations of where they were going to be. I thought they were going to be in the pack and in the mix for most of this season. I didn't expect them to be comfortably sitting in a playoff spot with a couple of point cushion, even on third place in the Pacific Division. So I ask again, how the hell are they doing this? This is one of the NHL's biggest surprises, and we're now only a few days away from U.S. Thanksgiving, Wes. Like,
can I interrupt you for a second?
Yeah.
Are you a believer in the U.S. Thanksgiving theory?
It's not the arbitrary date, but what I am a believer in is, it's a whole lot easier to protect. It's a whole lot easier to keep a cushion as opposed to make up a deficit. And it's a whole lot easier to protect, even on the mental side of things, the mindset side of things. I think it's a whole lot easier for a team to protect a cushion as opposed to make up a deficit. And how many times have we seen the Flames chasing all year? If we just go back to where they were 1 year ago. They were chasing all year. And then, you know, some other things happened. They traded away a bunch of important players and they missed by a mile. But how many times have we seen a Flames team chase all season only to miss by a few points? Whereas, you know, how many times in the last 15 years have they gotten off to good starts and then it completely fade away? I mean, maybe a couple of years ago, and I remember they got off to a great start through the first 2 months of the season in 2009, 2010,
yeah,
and that evaporated. But more often than not, when this team has built themselves a little bit of a cushion, they've been able to steer it home into a playoff spot. So that, I guess, am I a believer in the final Thursday of November? That's your cutoff date? No, not so much that. But I'm definitely a believer in, when you get yourself a cushion, especially as you move into the second quarter of the season, you've got to work hard to let it completely evaporate.
Those 27 points so far are real, right?
Yeah, they're not taking them away at any point.
And I like the way you put it. How many seasons have you and I covered? How many times have we stood at Jerome McGinley or Mark Giordano or Michael Backlund's locker and heard, oh yeah, but you know, we've put ourselves in a bit of a spot, but we're confident that we can climb back into the race. It's really, really, really hard to climb back into that race. And so I don't know, you know, that I'm a total believer in the U.S. Thanksgiving theory, but the, you know, the historical significance is what it is. Like, if you go look at it, 75 or 80% of the time, and by that I mean 75 or 80% of those playoff teams or whatever the actual number are still sitting there at the end of the season.
Yep.
Which makes it tough to discount.
And that's why I say, like, you've got to work hard to play yourself out of it. You've got to, like, you've got to really be bad. You've got to have, I mean, even if you go back to, everybody's comparing this to 10 years ago. If you go back to that team, they had a 8-game losing skid before Christmas.
We just figured those wheels were right off.
And it looked like they were. And then they won a game right before Christmas. Johnny Gaudreau with his kind of first star-making moment in the NHL where he scored those three goals. By the way, I encourage you to go check out Eric Francis's piece at sportsnet.ca about the Gaudreaus and their trip to Calgary next week when the team hosts Columbus. They'll be in Columbus, as will Wes, a little bit later on this week. And then the Blue Jackets are here very shortly afterwards. And the Gaudreaus will also be there. And that's about all we know about the tribute. But that was the first star-making moment for Johnny. Scored three to erase a three-rip lead, and they win in overtime on a Mark Giordano winner. And then they got things back on track, and they, I don't want to say they cruised, but the Kings, as much as they were the defending Stanley Cup champions, try as they will, they could not close down that gap because, to your point, it's really hard to close that down. And the Flames built up a cushion that year to lose eight straight, and they still found a way in. So again, I don't know if they're going to be able to drive home the next 61 games into a playoff spot, but I know that they are in a much better spot to do so than they were at any of the last 2 years. And let's see how they handle being the hunted as opposed to being that team chasing the entire way.
So let's get back to the WTF of it all,
as the kids would say.
Yeah, what the heck are we witnessing?
By the way, over at Money Pocket, I just like to track this. The Flames are at their highest playoff odds yet at 53.4%. They're still ninth on the probability list in the Western Conference, but 53.4% is by far the highest it's been all season long.
Where are they in the Pacific? Like, how many Pacific teams are ahead of them?
Three.
Okay.
Four, actually.
Okay.
Vegas, Edmonton, LA, Vancouver, all ahead of Calgary on the money puck list. But the gap's a whole lot smaller.
Yep.
53.4% for Calgary, 73.2% for Vancouver. And that gap has not been that close at any point this year. And again, money puck does their own thing. They have a lot of different factors that go into their probabilities. But okay, I don't ask the how the hell are they doing this in a derogatory fashion. I ask it just because I think everybody is surprised. I think a lot of people, I think there'd be plenty of people who would be lying if they said they saw exactly this coming. As optimistic as you might have been, I don't know how many people actually saw it being this good or this impressive through 21 games. Where does it start with you? Is it the intangible stuff? Is it the on-ice things that you can actually quantify with empirical data? I'm curious as to where this how the hell are they here question starts to be answered for you.
Well, I think the biggest part of it, and I sort of go back to what we were watching last fall, maybe not so much at this point, but sort of through the month of October especially, like this was a team that that really needed to get comfortable with the defensive style that Ryan Huska was demanding. And I would say, you know, in talking to the players, he even made some fairly important tweaks to that 5-on-5 system over this offseason. Like this team defends just miles and miles better than they did a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, the first answer for me in the why or the how is the way that they limit chances for their opponents, the way that they limit the five bellers or the 10 bellers or however many bells you want to associate, like this team doesn't have the sort of hair on fire defensive, the hair on fire defensive zone runaround that we were watching just over a year ago. And I think, you know, that's a credit to both coaching and buy-in. And then, you know, behind what has been a much improved defensive team has been terrific goaltending. And, you know, more so, especially recently from Dustin Wolf than Dan Vladar. But I think, you know, you've gotten better goaltending out of Dan Vladar this season than you had in seasons past, at least from my vantage point. And so you combine strong goaltending with a much more stingy sort of no-name defensive approach. Like, it doesn't matter who it is. Yeah, I get Rasmus Anderson and Mackenzie Weegar are playing the wheels off, but, you know, it seems almost like plug and play, which I did not see coming. Mm-hmm. Like, Saturday, suddenly Joel Hanley's in the lineup for the third time this season, and
did just fine.
They don't skip a beat defensively. And so those, and I'll throw it over to you now, buddy, but those are two of the big ones that stick out for me.
Well, okay. For me, I also lean towards kind of the actual on ice. And I don't think the intangible stuff is irrelevant, because I think it actually does play into it. But the on ice stuff that we're seeing right now, to me, starts with exactly what you said, from the crease out. And Jacob Markstrom, I thought, was a great member of the Calgary Flames and gave them something that they haven't had, and that is a number one goalie. And, you know, the actual quality of it fluctuated for many. They were not big fans. I was a big fan of Jacob and what he brought the team between the pipes. But in saying that, you know, since the 21-22 season, they haven't had goaltending quite like this, where the Flames are the number seven team overall in the NHL with a 9-11 overall save percentage. So they are a top third team goaltending, number seven, and they're number one still with their 5-on-5 save percentage of 9.43. So you're getting beyond good NHL goaltending.
9.43 at 5-on-5.
And that is that's a 5-point or 4-point edge,
yeah,
on Minnesota, who sits at 9.39. And they've gotten elite goaltending this year, too. So you get that, Wes, and then you mix it with the other thing, and that is their ability to limit the slot opportunities. Like, I still think the Flames, for them to be a team that I think even myself would take seriously in the playoffs and say, this team's got a threat to go deep, they're going to need to start controlling more games. They're going to need to start suppressing more shots. Like, they are a team that spends too much time on the back foot. They're a team that defends too much, and that's just, you can win around doing that, but eventually, as we saw 10 years ago.
I'm sitting here smiling because the idea that we're talking about what the Flames would have to do to be a team that we're talking about going deep seems so ridiculous where we were, right?
And yet, and
I'm not laughing at you, but I'm sitting here laughing at myself because I'm like, holy, how did we get here?
It's very, very fair, but one thing that I do think they're doing better than they did, say, 10 years ago, where they were a team that defended too much, spent too much time on the back foot, rope-a-doped too much, this team does do a good job defensively, a really good job. Again, they're a top 10 team when it comes to limiting slot opportunities, and that to me is, so not only are they getting elite goaltending, which they have been, Dan Vladar and obviously led by Dustin Wolf, that this has been one of the top seven tandems in the NHL, and then you get a top 10 team limiting high danger or slot opportunities. So yeah, they're getting a lot of time in their own zone. They're spending a lot of time defending, but they're doing a really good job once they're there, making it extremely difficult. Just go watch Saturday afternoon's game.
Yeah.
How difficult it was for Minnesota 5-on-5 to get to dangerous areas. They are what, 10th overall when it comes to the amount of 5-on-5 slot shots that they are allowing. So you've got good goaltending and a defensive mindset that's working, and those are the things that I think have led to this more than anything else.
Well, and you and I have talked about this both on air and off air. It's not smoke and mirrors. Like, it's not. How many times have the Calgary Flames stolen a game in either direction? How many times has their offense outscored a bunch of awful mistakes? Not very many, right?
No.
Their offense doesn't, you know, they're hard pressed to outscore the opposition when they play that stingy style we've been talking about. So, you know, they're not stealing games offensively because, oh yeah, well, we, you know, we played pretty loosey goosey, but happened to put up six. Like, they're not stealing games that way. And how many times have we talked about their goaltender stealing one? There's been games, don't get me wrong, starting with shutouts one apiece, that their goaltending was extremely good, but I'm not sure there was a game that I walked into the locker room post game or sat down to start writing post game and thought they don't win that game without their goalie. I just haven't felt that way.
There hasn't been a night where you felt like they've just downright stolen a game.
Right.
Like, there hasn't been a night, because again, all the want to compare to 10 years ago, which is, I'm not saying that's unfair, but like, even at this point, 10 years ago, you're like, there were games that you came out of saying, excuse me?
Yeah.
They just, and you know, there was, I think by this time, that two goal empty net or goalie pulled two goal comeback against New Jersey at the Dome, where I think Glenn Cross tied it and Hudler won it in a shootout. That had already happened.
Yeah.
They'd already had a few others where you're like, excuse me, how did they win that game? They got outshot how bad and won? And then obviously the one that I still think will stick out is the one I mentioned earlier when Johnny scored the hat trick in LA. But there haven't been those nights. Like, I mean, maybe Vancouver, maybe game one. But in the 20 games since that time, there have been nights where you're like, holy cow, they found a way. But there haven't been ones where you're like, how did they find a way? It's very easy to see how they've found ways to win games. Even the, you know, the Nazem Kadri game-tying goal against Pittsburgh. They probably deserve to win that hockey game. So I guess by saying that, I think it is a further underlining of they've played some pretty decent hockey. Like, yeah, they coughed up a lead against the Rangers, found a way to win. They coughed up a two-goal lead late against Minnesota, still found a way to win. But it's not like you come away completely mind-blown that they did.
No, and those comebacks that you talk about, obviously, you know, this team pulled a rabbit out of the hat on opening night. They're down 4-1 after 20 minutes. They, you know, briefly, completely lost their game as they looked for a little revenge after that hit on Kevin Rooney. Like, that starts to set the precedent, I suppose, for a team that showed a ton of belief on opening night to claw back the way they did and ultimately win in overtime. And there were a couple more comebacks really early in the season. And so that comparison to 14-15 sort of gained steam early. And I think there's, you know, I wrote about this actually last week. I do think there's plenty of similarities. And yet, to your point, you know, we'd sit there in the media lounge post game, or we'd walk out of the rink 10 years ago saying, what? They just did that again. Chris Russell blocked 28 shots and they threw stretch passes up the middle all night long, and they had Jonas Hiller in net, and they won another game that way. And this one, I don't know that the results are going to be sustainable. I don't know if this team playing this brand continues to win 12 out of 20 games.
Yeah,
but I feel like the style they're playing is maintainable. And I say that because the other word that I had scribbled down that I think has been so important to what they've done so far is commitment. And that's a commitment to their style of play that we've seen lapse twice. It happened to be in back-to-back games, but in Vegas and then on their inaugural trip to Utah, unfortunately, in their captain's 1,000th game, they forgot what sort of team they are. But I also think, and I know Michael Backlund told my colleague Danny Austin as much after the game on Saturday, that was a pretty valuable lesson. And I think their commitment to, let's be honest, the only brand that is going to work for this collection of players has been really important. Like, they are fully bought in. We're not giving Ryan Huska enough credit for what he's done so far. And a big part of the reason I say that is the buy-in he has from this group.
Yep. Let's read the text line at 960-960, because I think just as important as our thoughts, goaltending, the work they've done defensively, the fact they're relying on everybody and it's a by-committee thing, I think that's the technical how as to where they are. You add in the belief, you add in the confidence, you add in the intangibles, and you've got yourself, like I think Mackenzie Weegar summed it up, this is basically the way he said it pregame on Monday morning in Ottawa. I think he sums it up really well here.
Confidence is big, but I think we're confident with our structure and how we're playing. It's not just individuals and, you know, guys feeling good. I think it's our identity that we're confident about, and I think that goes a long way, and we got to carry that on the road tonight.
And I think that's exactly what it is. It's just a belief in if they play the way they need to play, they'll have success. And I think the more validation or the more that happens, the more you're just going to continue believing that. And it just makes it a whole lot easier to stick with it.
And, you know, that's where that word that I used comes in commitment. Like if they think 21 games of that style and they can kind of coast from here, they're going to be sorely mistaken. But I do think I see it all the time. I see a commitment to that style that they need to play. This team's annoying in a good way. Like if you're on the other side, you're thinking, man, would these guys go away?
Could they beat it already?
Would they stop working so damn hard? Would they understand that they just gave up two goals in the last 4 minutes of a game? And when you do that,
wave
in this
the white
league, you're
flag,
supposed
you
to just
idiots.
Roll over. Like they're annoying. And I mean that in a nice way.
No, it's a compliment.
Like not when I say to you via text that our producers are a little bit annoying. Like this team, this team's a different kind of annoying.
He uses another A word when he says what our producers are. You attentive.
Awesome.
Attentive.
Awesome.
Shad, attentive.
Awesome.
Remember the pesky Sens?
Vaguely.
The frustrating Flames.
Yeah, they are a little frustrating. The flustering Flames.
Ooh, very nice. I like that. Text line, 960-960. Got about 10 minutes or so to hit some texts. Are we in the upside down? The Flames are not supposed to be this good, but they are this good. Why? I think we did our best shot at trying to explain that. Paul writes, I think the team is really gelling. Getting rid of everybody that didn't want to be here sure helped with the camaraderie as well as limit the distractions in the room. I do think there are far fewer distractions this year than they were at pretty much any point last year.
And I'll just add to Paul's point. Like there is a real we're going to show you guys mentality. There is a real collective chip on the shoulder that came from the questions they were being asked and the predictions and everything in the preseason. You and I both stood there, buddy, for a scrum with Kevin Ball the other day, and he just mentioned it over and over and over, and not in a rude way. Just like, we're trying to exceed expectations. We're trying to prove everybody wrong. And that, I know it sounds silly, but we've seen it enough times. Like that just has a real galvanizing effect on a group.
Nick and Salmon Arm, culture and front office efficiency are much more important than I think we give credit for. This says from our favorite Canucks fan, Sarah, who may be starting a romance with Shan, depending on how how you want to read these texts. After game one, I doubled down on the preseason assertion that this is a sneaky good team. This from Dale. Go ahead.
Do we have like a disclaimer or something we should play about starting any sort of romance with Shan?
I mean, at your own peril is all I'll say, as I can attest to. Our romance was very hurtful. Dale writes, games 20 to 40 in an NHL season provides the best insight into what the team will be that season. I know that was always Peter Marr's kind of golden rule was the second quarter of the season really tells you what your group is about. So far, their second quarter, they're 100% on with a 4-3 shootout win. But we'll see how the next 20 or so games go here.
Well, and you set up this conversation by saying, you know, we're not having this discussion in a derogatory
way. Not at all.
You know, we're not taking shots at the Flames, but the fact we're having this discussion at the start of that critical game 21 to 40 window is something in itself.
Yep.
Like I think we expected that if we were sitting here talking about a .500 team today, that they'd be maybe even a little bit better than we had them.
Yep.
And certainly, you know, right around the wheelhouse. We're sitting here talking about a team that's 12-6-3.
Yep. Trent writes, I got to say, guys, this is where I was hoping they'd be if they got quality goaltending. I didn't expect Wolf to put up Kipper-like numbers. His goals against for November is sitting at a 1.62. I thought if Wolf was playing at a Calder-worthy season level, they'd be playoff bound. Let's hope they keep it rolling. Connie and Iggy remember 96-03 of no playoffs. I'm not surprised they didn't go full rebuild. Ask Iginla how much he enjoyed his first seven seasons. This comes from Mick. Torts and the Flyers were in a playoff spot all year until the end and have the 11th pick overall. The difference will be the Habs will get the 11th. The Flames are the weakest, most pathetic, middling franchise in pro sports. I've loved this team since 1980, but I'm now starting to hate them.
Sounds that way.
Playoffs are the goal, not cups, and I want no part of that. That comes from Mick. He actually sent in, as I was reading that text, he then sent, are you going to read my text, Pat? Not quite positive enough for you? No, Mick, I was reading it as you sent it. Jeez. Do you think that you're the only person that texted in? We have other listeners other than you, Mick. As much as I love you, we do have other listeners.
I know that, you know, because I see it on social media and various places. I know that there is a segment that's frustrated every time they win games. I just think, you know, if you look at the way that they're doing this with rookie goaltender playing the way he is, with the youngest forwards on their roster in Connor's area and Matt Coronato playing crucial roles, like this isn't a bunch of guys they signed in the summer to 1 year contracts like Tyson Barrie and Anthony Mantha hogging all the power play time. Yeah. And sort of falsely leading a team to a surprise start. Like I don't understand if, and I'm not saying that Mick and others like him aren't welcome to feel this way. I don't understand when you're watching sort of the method that they've got to this, how you can sit and say they messed it all up. I just don't get it.
What else we got here? Let's try to get to as many of these as we can. It's kind of funny to think that if Rooney didn't get hurt the first game, Kirkland would probably not be here, and he's been clutch in most games, at least the ones that go to a shootout. This from Zach in Canmore. The Flames would have to go 10 games over 500 to equal the record of last year's final wild card team. They need to tumble down the stretch with a record equal to last year's Flames point total of 81 points. Finish 10 games over 500 down the stretch, and they should be in the playoffs. This reads from Scott in Yorkton. Well, actually, I don't know the answer to the question he's asking. So this reads, so am I allowed to start getting excited yet? Why not? There's no rule about being, you have to be stoic to be a Flames fan. Mm-hmm. You are allowed to enjoy this.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to get really mad every time they win, there's certainly some company out there, but you might as well just settle into it.
Brendan says, Patty, I totally agree with you guys that goaltending's been huge in getting the boys to where they are. However, I also think there's a couple other things that have been overlooked. One of those being that last year, I think Huska's changes were big and it took the guys a long time to adjust. Two, I think it's very overlooked at how important it is they have a captain again. I think Bax is huge in that room. Three, I think there's a ton of pride in that room, and those guys are a tight group. And don't undersell yourself, Patty. That comes from Brendan in Invermere. Thank you, Brendan. What else we got here at 960, 960? Getting to as many as we can. I just hope they don't deviate from the plan. It's fun, but will they have the guts to sell expiring contracts if they're in the playoffs? Buying could get them back a long way. Maybe they don't fully sell, although I still think that they're going to be very pragmatic, but I don't think... Based on everything that I know and every conversation that I've had, this is not a team that's all of a sudden going to start buying like a regular buying team does. Yeah. Just based on their results this year. I don't think that's going to happen.
I think, and we've chatted plenty about 14-15, I think it's very valuable. I think Flames fans can take a bit of assurance or reassurance from the fact that Craig Conroy was part of the management group after 14-15, and I think would tell you that the way that they proceeded shortly thereafter, they changed course. And I'm putting words in Craig Conroy's
No, but they did change.
Here,
no, no,
but
they did change course, and I can tell you for a fact they did.
Yeah, and I know there were people in that front office who said, hey, stop, like, not yet. We're not ready to be trading for Dougie Hamilton, to be trading first-round picks. The Flames changed course, and I believe Craig Conroy, having had a front-row seat, having been a part of hockey ops at that time, would have really learned a valuable lesson. And as a Flames fan, I think that should give you some assurance that he's not going to repeat those same mistakes.
Look, this is why I always tell you, text early, because now we don't have time for any more texts. Text early. And then like 50 of them came in as we were reading texts. It says Steinberg and Wes along with you this hour on Flames Talk, and we're coming at you from our Groundworks downtown studio, your local experts for foundation and crawl space repair.
Flames Talk is live on Calgary's hockey station, Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
All right, happy Monday. It's Monday, November 25th. Steinberg and Wes Gilbertson along with you on this Monday edition of Flames Talk, game day edition, as the Flames get ready to kick off a four-game road trip through the Eastern Conference. And it's time for our Daily Flames Roundtable, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The simpler way to sell your vehicle is with their expertise. Visit Mercedes-Benz Country Hills just minutes from the airport. So it's Steinberg. It's Wes Gilbertson of Post Media. And now the voice of the Flames, Derek Wills, joins us to complete our Daily Flames Roundtable. Gents, we saw Martin Pospisil score a power play goal in Saturday's shootout win over Minnesota. We saw Yegor Sharangovich score a power play goal, second goal in as many games for him, as the Flames take that win over Minnesota. Those are two players that have been kind of, mired in inconsistency or mired in struggles throughout the first part of this season, but all of a sudden look like maybe they're playing a whole lot better. How encouraging is it watching those two guys playing much better hockey here of late?
Well, for me, I am more encouraged with what I'm seeing from Yegor Sharangovich than with what I'm seeing from Martin Pospisil, who I do think has been a little bit better, a little bit more noticeable. It's good to see him back on the score sheet again. I mean, he snapped a long pointless streak in that victory over the Islanders, and then a long goalless streak, a really long one that dated back to the season opener versus the Canucks, with a big power play goal for the Flames in their win over the Wild. But for me, he's still not back to being the guy who he was for most of his rookie season, and that is a guy who is usually flying in there on the forecheck and banging and crashing and making life miserable for his opponents with his physicality and with his ability to get under their skin. He's still not back to being that player for me. And I had a great chat with him today. I talked to the coaches about Martin Pospisil this morning as well. And he's getting there, but I don't think he's quite there. And everybody I talked to kind of concurred with that. So he's made some progress, but I think there's still a little ways to go. As for Yegor Sharangovich, it's got to be tough. You missed the first seven games of the regular season, and you're playing catch-up. He certainly didn't look as impactful to get his season started as he did for most of last year, especially the back half of last season when he went on an absolute tear. But he's looked a lot better, in my opinion, in the last couple of games. He scored in back-to-back games. It looks like he's done a way better job putting himself in a position to shoot the puck, and his shot is certainly his most dangerous weapon. But even when he's not producing offensively, Yegor Sharangovich is still good defensively. So he brings a lot to the table for this team, and he's playing better for sure. I think Pospisil has still got a ways to go, but Sharangovich seems to be getting back to his A game.
I think, Willsie, I've been a little more bullish on the Martin Pospisil turnaround than you have. I think he's made some really, really major strides, and I guess particularly on that four-game homestand. I'm always careful about how kind of close to the rookie Martin Pospisil I think we're going to see, because I also do think we're talking about a player who's maybe figuring out how he can have a long NHL career, which was probably not with quite as reckless of a style as he played as a rookie. And while I know that sort of rambunctious, I'm going to hit everything brand has to be a huge part of Martin Pospisil, I also think it's
probably to be expected that he was going to have to take at least one log off the fire in his second season, just to kind of maintain, you know, a style that he can play throughout an NHL career. And so, you know, I just think that, especially since he was moved back to wing, especially since the team had a couple days off to recharge, I've just really, really liked the way his game's going. I think, you know, the impact on the forecheck is starting to return. I really like the way he plays that that net front spot on the power play. Like, I think he can be a really good fit there. And yeah, I'd echo what you'd say, or what you said about Yegor Sharangovich. I think there's been a lot to like in his game. You know, still a guy with just one even strength goal on the season, and I expect that number to start to climb soon. But I am a little more bullish on what we've seen out of Pospisil recently. I think he's made some pretty significant strides from where he was.
I actually quite liked Pospisil on that homestand myself. I thought that for the first time this year, or the first time since the first game or two, guys, he looked like a noticeable player again. And he made a couple of things happen with his speed. He had that great breakaway opportunity against Shesterkin. He had the goal going to the front of the net where he needs to score from on the power play against Minnesota. I saw a whole lot more of Pospisil hounding down pucks on the forecheck, which just wasn't a part of his game in the early stages of the career of the season when things dropped off a little bit. So I definitely am starting to see a whole lot more of the Martin Pospisil signs that you'd want to see from a guy who can make an impact and can be an important player on this team. So I think he's definitely playing better and has room to improve, and that's encouraging. And then on the Sharangovich front, yeah, I mean, he just, for the last two or three games, he looks like that guy who is a whole lot more confident. He's launching that shot a whole lot more confidently. We're seeing it hit the net, and when that thing hits the net, have fun. Like, both Shesterkin and Gustafson gave looks on both those goals on Thursday and Saturday, guys. Like, what do you want me to do with that? Is basically what the body language was after both these goals the last two games. Like, if you're going to let him get there, if you're going to set him up anywhere near the slot, what do you want me to do with that thing? And you saw that in both of them. I mean, you if you're an opposing penalty kill, that's something you got to start scouting again, is you can't let that guy get to that area. And the last thing I'll say, Wilsey, is I honestly, like, and Ryan Huska said this on Saturday afternoon following the game when asked specifically by Wes, actually, about Pospisil. Guys, I don't think there's any coincidence that we're seeing these guys play a little better and we're seeing these guys look a little more impactful when they finally have been moved away from a position that is not at their strength and put on the wing permanently, or at the very least, not flip-flopped. And maybe that's the more important thing, whether it's wing or center. They're not moving back and forth. And Zeri, who we're going to talk about in just a little bit, for the last three or four games, has maybe done a nice job of solidifying that for now. And so you've got Pospisil, who's now on the wing, and Sharangovich, who's now on the wing, and they're not moving back and forth. I think that's been a big help and a big part of it as well.
Well, I definitely agree wholeheartedly with that. But the sense I get talking to Martin Pospisil for 5 or 6 minutes this morning, and then talking to, I asked Ryan Huska about him, and I asked Cale MacLean about him. Yeah, he's been better, but the sense I get from everybody is that they still need him to be better than he's been in the last two or three games. And talking to Pospisil, basically he said, if I'm skating, everything else will fall into place. The hits that haven't been there aren't there because he's not getting there in time to throw them. And if he skates and gets in the forecheck, then I think the goals and the points will be there, because that's where he can cause havoc. But for him, it's all about moving his feet. And when he's doing that, he's effective. And when he's not, he's not. So I'm going to continue to watch for that moving forward. But, you know, the big development for me is Yegor Sharangovich. I led this team in goals last season, broke NHL records for most goals and points in a season by a Belarusian. And even though he was solid defensively, there was certainly something lacking offensively for him for most of the season. But the last couple of games, he's looked very dangerous again. So that's a very positive sign. And, hey, I give Ryan Huska credit. you know, his team is playing some really good hockey right now, and sometimes coaches don't want to tinker with their lines and pairings when that's happening, but he's been looking for more offense. The Flames have scored three or fewer goals in 18 straight games, and that is probably not a long-term recipe for success. So he's tried some new forward lines, he's tried some new power plays, and they seem to be working pretty well.
And that's probably what's missing right now from that Kadri, Kuzmenko, Pospisil line is that they need to produce some 5-on-5 offense. Like I really liked the line switch in terms of, you know, having Sharon Govich there with Coronado and Backlund. I think that's been a really solid trio. You know, I've liked what Blake Coleman has brought alongside Zarian Huberto, but the Calgary Flames aren't going to keep this up the way that they're going right now if they can't get that Kadri, Kuzmenko, and Pospisil line on the score sheet on a little bit more regular basis.
Okay, so that is our first part of the Daily Flames Roundtable. Derek Wills, Wes Gilbertson, Pat Steinberg along with you on this Monday Flames Talk. And I guess somewhat related to that is, you know, they tried Pospisil to begin with down the middle, and maybe that experiment didn't work out in its first or second iteration as successfully as they would have liked. And Sharon Govich they tried down the middle, and I think that was part of why maybe the offense didn't look as, I don't know, didn't come as easy. Well, he was playing down the middle. And so then they try Connor Zeri at center last Friday in that win over Nashville. And so he's been playing down the middle of the last four games. With what we're seeing from him down the middle, and it's early still, it's only 12 periods and a little bit of overtime as well. But with what we're seeing from him and perhaps it looking encouragingly like he can remain there, does that lessen the urgency in your mind for the Flames to go out, for Craig Conroy to go out and make a move to acquire another center iceman, which has been kind of a conversation that's been on the fringes here the last number of weeks?
I'm not sure it lessens it. I mean, if I was Craig Conroy, I would still be looking for a top six centerman who is in his early to mid-20s. If that guy is out there and available for the right price, I would definitely take a long look at that. But, you know, Connor Zeri, of the three players the Flames have tried in the other top nine center spot, of course, you've got Nazem Kadri and Michael Backlund taking two of those three spots. And we've seen two other guys, Martin Pospisil and Yegor Sharangovich, try to fill the other one. I think Connor Zeri, again, small sample sizes, as you said, Pat, but I think he's been the best of the bunch. And the additional responsibilities that come with playing center as opposed to the wing, I do think that it really impacted Martin Pospisil and impacted Yegor Sharangovich less and in a different way. But I still think him playing on the wing kind of frees him up offensively, even though I had no issues with how he played defensively at center. But Connor Zeri doesn't really seem to have lost anything offensively with those additional defensive responsibilities. So for me, that's a really promising sign. And he's been, I think, equally as effective playing both on the wing and at center, which is a testament to how good a player he is this early in his NHL career. The one big thing for me, and it's not just a Connor Zeri problem, it's a Calgary Flames problem. He has to be, and they have to be, better in the faceoff circle. They have really struggled in that area this season. As a matter of fact, they don't have one player above 50% on faceoffs. Yegor Sharangovich is number one at 50.0. And Connor Zeri, of the guys who have played significant minutes up the middle, he's dead last at 32.8%. So maybe I'm nitpicking a little bit here because he's done a lot of really good things since he moved to the middle, but he has to work on that faceoff percentage. But again, that's not just a Connor Zeri problem. That's a Flames problem so far this season.
For me, guys, I'm not sure that I was ever all in on the search for a center at the start of the season. And not because I don't think that it's a long-term priority for the Flames, but just because I don't know that until you kind of figured out what you had up the middle, that paying the exorbitant price that you're going to be asked to pay for a 20-something center who could potentially make an impact in your top six, like until you knew what you had internally, I didn't think that made a whole bunch of sense. And so for me, if I was in Craig Conroy's chair, I'd still be sort of with one foot on the brake, waiting to see how the Connor Zeri experiment at center plays out, because it's not that it stops you from searching for a center, but it might guide kind of exactly where in the lineup you'd be looking to put a guy. And I don't just say that immediately. I say that long term. I mean, if there was a good deal for a 25-year-old center out there, I think it would have been done long ago. This is exactly what every team is looking for. I think what Connor Zeri has done in the past few games at least gives Craig Conroy some leverage back if he is having trade talks. He doesn't maybe look as desperate to add a center as he did a week ago because of how Zeri's fit in that spot so far. But I still think, you know, the jury might be out based on Connor Zeri and some of the other pieces on just the exact profile of a center that you're looking for. And for that reason, for the reason that I think the sort of chemistry in the locker room has a lot to do with how the Flames are performing so far, I'd really be careful about a swing for the fences trade in November. But I don't know what Craig Conroy's thinking on that, but that would be my kind of two cents on it.
I know for me, like I think long term, eventually they're going to need to find more young centers. But if there was any feel that they needed to go out and do one right now and make a deal right now because they felt like they were a little thin, I do think maybe the accelerator can be a little more feathered now, because you're seeing you've maybe found somebody who can do this for the balance of the rest of the season. And Willsy, to your point, that doesn't mean that if something is available and in conversations around the league and all that type of stuff, if something comes up, doesn't mean you say no to it. But I think if there was an active search on it, and I don't know how active it ever would have been, but if there is an active, or there was an active search going on, maybe you can gear down a little bit on it. At least I think it makes sense to let this continue to play out for a longer runway so you can see exactly what you have. Because look, at some point, they are going to need to backfill on Backlund and Kadri. We're talking about a 35 and 34-year-old. Both guys are closer to the end of their careers than the beginning, and that's not saying they're still not effective, but that's just the fact of the matter. So, you know, at some point, they're going to need to find more young centers who can play further up the lineup. And so Zeri continuing to play there makes nothing but sense and maybe lessens the right now urgency. What it doesn't do is lessen the big picture need for eventually to find your franchise guy down the middle and probably to have a few other guys, Zeri and somebody else or other guys to help backfill once Backlund and Kadri are no longer the either playing or no longer quite the impact makers that they are right now. So in the immediacy, yeah, I think that you let this Zeri thing play out a little bit longer and you don't need to be thinking anything drastic right this instant. But in the long term, the need for organizational center depth doesn't go anywhere.
Yeah, and I think Michael Backlund is playing some of the best hockey of his career right now, and he's 35. Nazem Kadri isn't off to a great start this season. He's 34, and I still think he's got lots of gas left in the tank. But yeah, you're right. At some point in time, you're going to have to replace both of those guys. So you hope you have some answers internally, but chances are they're going to have to search externally as well, whether that be in the NHL draft or free agency or via a trade. And one team I do wonder about, guys, is the team the Flames are playing tonight. It has been a tough go for the Senators, who, a lot like the Sabres and the Coyotes, seem to be in a perpetual rebuild with no light at the end of the tunnel the way things have gone of late. I mean, they've lost five in a row. They're 0-3 to start a four-game homestand. People are really upset with Brady Tkachuk in this market, and Travis Green felt like he had to defend his captain when he talked to the media earlier today. So the heat is on here in Ottawa, and I do wonder if this continues on much longer, if the Senators will make a move to maybe try to shake things up a little bit. And who knows, maybe one of their young centermen pops free, and that's something that the Flames could explore. So it's going to be interesting to see how both of these teams kind of move forward, and it's one of the reasons why I'm looking forward to this matchup tonight.
All right, boys, that'll wrap us up on our Daily Flames Roundtable. We'll do it on a day off on Tuesday, Willsy, and we'll react to this Flames-Senators game to kick off a four-game road trip. Thank you, pal.
Sounds good, guys. Enjoy the game.
He's Derek Wills. He's Wes Gilbertson. My name is Pat Steinberg. And that's our Daily Flames Roundtable on this Monday, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The simpler way to sell your vehicle is with their expertise. Visit Mercedes-Benz Country Hills just minutes from the airport.
Talking your team right now. Flames Talk is on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
It's Steinberg and Wes as this edition of Flames Talk rolls on. It's a Monday, which means it's time for our weekly chat with the head coach of the Calgary Wranglers, Trent Kulltime, on this Monday edition of the program. Since we last spoke to the head coach of the Wranglers, they took a 4-3 win over San Diego on Wednesday, then fell 5-3 and 6-2 in Tucson on Friday and Saturday. Wranglers now 13-5-1, first in the Pacific Division in the American Hockey League. And Trent joins us now on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. Mr. Cole, appreciate it as always. How are you, sir?
I'm good, thanks. How are you guys doing?
We're doing well. We're doing well. How would you look back and evaluate this last group? I know this last week, rather. I know the last two games, not what you would have wanted to see. But from your group, how would you evaluate the last three games and since we last spoke?
Yeah, no, you know what? Since we last spoke, I think it's kind of one of those things that we're all of a sudden one of the better teams, and we're doing pretty good in our division. And then, you know, we've ran into, I'm going to say, stiff competition. In other words, everyone knows that there's a decent team that they're coming in, or that we're coming in to play them, so to speak, if we're on the road, and we're getting other teams' best to start a game and for a game, and we're, you know, and I think in the last weekend we got it kind of handed to us, and I felt like it's in all departments, and it was one of those things that's like, wow, we got to be better, that's for sure. And it's the first kind of, for us, it's kind of our first sidestep, which is good experience for all of us.
Well, and that's, you know, that's the first time you've lost games in regulation consecutively this year, which I think is a credit to how well the first quarter of your season's gone. But also, as you say, kind of a learning experience or a teaching moment for your group. What has allowed you so far, Trent, to respond really positively after losses, and kind of what will be important doing that this time around?
Yeah, no, I think we've been organized. I think we've done our just kind of a brief synopsis. We found some offense early, you know, and I thought then around game 10, we kind of got specialty teams kind of really kind of started kicking into gear and doing a good job. And I think our goaltending has been really good throughout all that, and it's given us a chance every night. So that's been kind of the recipe, and I think now too is that. But also too, like, there's going to be some nights where we're going to get some challenges, and now we're having that. And I guess what the other thing too is, I think the rest of the league is catching up. Like, other teams,
right,
maybe not as didn't have the quick start maybe we did, but they're catching up now. And, you know, and stuff that maybe small things that we were masking are now kind of becoming maybe more evident, and we're going to have to find a way to keep getting better.
Trent, did your and I probably should have just asked Reese this question, so I wasn't asking you. But did your group come home, or are you right? Did you go right to Manitoba for the games this weekend?
No. So we're back in Calgary,
okay,
driving around the snow. But we came back yesterday. We got back last night, having a day off here today, and then we're going to have a couple practice days, and we take off Thursday to go to Winnipeg.
Okay, and I would imagine probably, because you have played, like, there have been some stretches where you're playing a lot of hockey in a short period of time, to be able to get almost this full week day off and then also get yourself a few practice days. What's the value in that, Trent?
Oh, there's a ton of that. First of all, travel days, so that's never really, you know, you never really rest or get yourself healed up when you're traveling, right? So it's nice for us to have a day off here now, and I think everybody kind of needs it after being on the road for 10 days and, you know, seeing their families or significant others, etc., right? So that's nice. And then we got two practice days, which we're going to need for sure. So and that's just, we got some work to do, and you know, it's nice. It's for me as a coach, you get a little excited because we've been pushed and we didn't respond as well as we wanted to. And so now we got to find a way to get better.
We're chatting with Trent Cull. He's the head coach of the Calgary Wranglers. He joins us every Monday here on Flames Talk at Steinberg and Wes Gilbertson. Wes?
Trent, I really like the way you put it earlier when you said this is sort of our first sidestep of the season. You know, you talk about the two practice days coming up. I'm wondering, you know, you'd prefer obviously to never have a sidestep, but what sort of opportunity, for lack of a better term, does that afford a coach when you get back on the ice with your guys?
Just, you know what, just some of the small, it's funny, it's not like we're talking about big things that need changes. Like the groundwork's been laid, so to speak. Now it's just, are we willing to get better and to kind of put ourselves in uncomfortable situations to get better? And so I think that's where we're at right now. We played a team that played us pretty heavy, pretty hard. Well, actually, they kind of, like I said, I felt like in all aspects, they kind of beat us up for two nights. And so it's good. It's good for us to know that now we're going to have to push ourselves. We're going to have to get outside of our comfort boxes. And maybe some things that were coming to us a little bit easier on at the start of the year, and now it's pro hockey. Now we got to dig in, you know what I mean? And now get uncomfortable and do things that maybe you didn't want to do, but you got to do it if you want to, you know, excel in this game, right?
I wanted to ask you about Hunter Brustevich. He's a guy, obviously, first season playing pro hockey. Lots of excitement about him as a young prospect. You know, basically an every nighter for your group on the blue line. How would you evaluate what you've seen from Hunter so far?
It's been good. He's gotten probably, this is not probably the thing you'd expect me to say, but he's probably gotten too much. It's a lot we've been asking of Hunter as a young guy, because he's running a power play unit. The way it is right now is that we're kind of our personalities, our traits as a group, you know, we don't really have certain new guys, so we kind of give him this role and trust him into it, and whether kind of good or bad, or, you know, and so now I should probably be a little more selective of how I've been with this. But I think his 5-on-5 play has been solid and good. He's a good puck mover, finding his way physically and boxing guys out and stopping pucks and being physical in D zone are areas that he's going to have to work on. And then just the consistency of everyday grinding and of pro hockey, right? It's, you're playing against other men, big, strong guys, and it's not easy sometimes. So I think that overall it's been great, and probably, you know, I probably should have had less, you know, start them off with, and kind of gradually add to that. But sometimes with what you get, you do what you can, I guess.
It's probably been a couple of weeks now, but I had a quick conversation with Hunter after one of your practices, and I was asking him about his transition to the pro ranks, and one of the things that he said as it sort of pertains to offense, obviously a prolific producer at the junior level, one of the things that he mentioned to me is that he's found it hard to get pucks through. He's just sort of noticing how much more structure and how many more shin pads are waiting there as you try to get pucks on net from the blue line. I don't know if it's help a guy through that, but in your experience, what's it take for a guy as he jumps from junior to pro to sort of hone in on that part of it?
I think it's just like you said, it's just the experience of it, of keep, because what happens is too, it's the same thing you'd say at probably almost any level, but like the hockey keeps getting better as the year progresses, right? And keeps getting higher in the elevation and the speed. And so you've got to make sure you're constantly like almost ahead of the curve as a team and as an individual. So that's something that I think that he's just got to keep getting those minutes, keep getting himself out there in those situations. And that's the thing, like, I'm okay with Hunter and where he stands things offensively, and whether the points come or not, it'll just be more like being that every day. Hey, can I play against another team's top two minds? Can I play against like one like bigger, stronger guy? How do I manipulate this guy? How can I play against him down low in D zone coverage? So those are a lot of the things that I think some of the younger guys have. The probably I would say the biggest challenge, because in any junior hockey, they're kind of at the top of the food chain, right? In the sense of bigger, stronger, older, all that. And then when you come here, it's all a little reversal here again, right? So that's part of the things that they have to get used to.
Let me ask you about one more guy on your blue line, and that would be Ilya Solovyov. You know, certainly some offensive production, 4 goals and 10 points in 15 games so far. He's been, I know, piling up the pluses, which is typically a good sign. What have you seen out of Ilya so far this fall?
That's it exactly. Probably in the, going back to your question about Hunter, like he's a guy who's a little bit older, a little more savvy. So he's had his he knows how to get that puck into an area. You know what I mean? And offensively, he's done a good job of, like, I think one thing with the most part with Solo this year, it's been a more of a shooting first attitude. We've been trying to implement that to all our group on the back end and more net front traffic. And so he's been kind of a catalyst off of that. And I think that, His defensive play has always been really good, and I think now he's adding that other part to it. He knows that if he's making those first option plays, and I said to him this, we're talking about this past week, of just being absolutely boring doing it, like just being like, it's just monotonous that he just does the same thing over and over, and just hitting that first pass and hitting that first pass. And what that does is just create so much speed for our team, and we have speed to the puck as we can then progress our way down the ice. And I think that that's something that he's, you know, always can, we always can get better at certain things, but I think that that's something that he's getting better at this year.
Trent, we're chatting with Trent Cull, head coach of the Wranglers. It's still a relatively young blue line for you, and I've asked you a couple times before about managing that, but like when even if you take a look big picture organizationally for the Flames and with what's happening with your group right now, like pretty exciting that you've got so many young players, whether it's Brustevich or Poirier, Solovyov still relatively young, Grushnikov, so on and so forth. Like the fact that you're working with a really young and developing blue line, how exciting is that for the organization? And I'm curious, kind of like, how exciting is that for you as the coach?
I didn't Kuznetsov as well. Yeah, yep. I mean, yep. we've got a young group, and they're playing a lot of minutes, and there's going to be some nights too. Like we just kind of went through it that we're going to have some hiccups. You know what I mean? But that's part of it. That's part of just sticking them out there, and they're going to have to find their way through, and we're going to help them through all that. But it is, it's been, you know what, we've had a really positive start, and it's been great. And about time that we've got some stuff that, some kind of sand in our eye, so to speak, you know what I mean? Because we got to get a little gritty and get that stuff out of there and find our way through some of the battles.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of what we've had. But again, young guys getting great experience, I've loved it. Other guys, you know, elevating, and then certain nights, different guys, et cetera. And then hopefully we can get that whole group to just keep on climbing as we move along here.
Well, I guess the last question I'd ask you, Trent, how much did you enjoy coming from being in California? Like you're in San Diego, and then you're in Tucson, Arizona, and then you came home to this. Like, I'm just curious as to what that shock was like to your system.
There was a bunch of guys, so we flew out of Phoenix yesterday, and there's guys that were on the flight coming back. There's probably like 10 of these guys. I don't know if they're on a golf trip or whatever. They got their shorts on and this and that. And I was giggling because yesterday I was outside as much as I could before we had our bus to the airport, you know, soaking up a little sun and just walking around. And it's just, it's hard to believe, but I try to keep those conversations to a limit, especially when I'm talking to my wife and kids back home. But they kept updating me on what was going on here, and then all of a sudden you're like, can't be that bad. And they start sending pics, and then you walk through the door of the plane there yesterday, and you're like, oh my goodness. So, but no, nice to be back in hockey weather, and awesome to see the Flames doing so well too, man. It's great to see them. I think they've been playing great lately. So I'm a fan, as does everybody else, get the chance to watch them because we've had conflicting schedules and we're traveling all over. So it's nice to be able to sit down and watch that game.
Trent, that's a veteran move, hey? Lots of sunscreen so you don't come back with too much of a tan.
You know what? I was trying to get a little sun on me, you know what I mean? It just felt so good. Like, I was like, how much vitamin D can I, like, consume here, you know what I mean, in a certain amount of time before we left. But, yeah, no, I was okay. Unfortunately, I didn't come back with a red face or anything like that, so even though I was trying a little bit. But
good luck in Winnipeg this weekend, Trent. Friday, Saturday against Manitoba. Then you get some games on home ice following that. And as always, really appreciate the time on this Monday. We'll chat again next week. Thank you, sir.
Thanks, guys. Enjoy the game tonight.
We shall. He is Trent Cull. He's the head coach of the Calgary Wranglers. He joins us Mondays, and he joins us on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. Enjoy hockey and football game day specials at 6060 Memorial Drive Northeast. Pickup and delivery available at Atlas Pizza, 403-248-3344. As we start to wrap things up this hour on Flames Talk, our producers this hour have been Cam Hughes and Shan Vergie. Wes Gilbertson's on Twitter at Wes Gilbertson, and my name is Pat Steinberg. That'll wrap us up on the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Treat yourself with up to $500 in savings of fire-resistant gun safes. Explore the full line of safes at CalgaryLockAndSafe.com.